Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the fifth episode of the BerlinBrigade.com podcast, brought to you by BerlinBrigade.com. I'm your host, Dave Guerra, and I am glad that you could join me today. As always, a great big Berlin Brigade thanks to the United States Army Europe Band and Soldiers Chorus for the intro music, Auf Wiedersehen. We're going to have a great time on this podcast. For those of you that have just found us on the internet and did not serve in Berlin, we welcome you, and it is our intent for you to gain a deeper and better understanding of our time in Berlin as well as our mission during the Cold War. So, without wasting any time, everyone fall in. Let's get episode 5 underway. This podcast is being recorded and compiled on Saturday, April 12, 2008. And as always, we divide this podcast into three segments. Talk about the website, updates, stats, numbers, stuff like that, anything that's arisen since the last podcast, special announcements, and special guest interviews. As always, I would like to thank everyone for visiting BerlinBrigade.com, the website, and listening, of course, to this podcast. Currently, our registry database is sitting at 2,850 names and email addresses. Wow, what can I say? We're still on track for 3,000 before the end of the year, and so if you know anybody out there that has not come onto the website and wants to, well, you know, sign up or put their name up on the registry for everybody else to get a hold of you, then get up there. Let's go. It's free. It's easy. It's painless. It'll take a little while, but hey, that's just the way it goes. And on that note, we'll talk about these things. First off, I want to thank everyone again for submitting their change of email address notices through the online registry application. Thanks. It really works. It's made things a whole lot easier. And what I mean by this is if you want to change your email address on the registry, please fill out the online registry form in the comment section. And then in the comment section, sorry, please write change of address. It'll make things a whole lot easier. This process is really starting to take off. Well, like I said last time, and I'll say it again, the registry database itself is one thing that's not automated on the website. It means that I still enter all the names and addresses to include the change of addresses by hand. And as I said last time, and I'll say it again, the only reason I do this is to ensure the integrity of the database is not compromised by automated web bots or visitors to the website with malicious intent, and meaning people that didn't sign up or didn't belong there, or names that are just out of there, or just kind of, we've all seen The Simpsons, you know, when Bart calls in and says, I'm looking for so-and-so. Those kinds of names have popped up in the past. So I just kind of verify them, and I'll send back an email and just say, look, just want to make sure that this is who you are. And, you know, I want to say about 99% of the time, I do not get a response back. So this is really saves us that time of having to go back and repair or delete stuff out of a database when it could have just been prevented by what I do. So anyway, so this just means that the database is not immediately updated. Okay, I try to update it at least twice a month now, and it's in conjunction with the new podcast release. So please be patient if you submit your registry information and it's not immediately online. But you know what? By the time the next podcast comes online, it should be there. And that takes care of website news. The special announcements for Episode 5 are, well, rather simple. Up until earlier this week, the only way of listening to this podcast was to listen to it from the front page of the BerlinBrigade.com website. Well, folks, I have some good news. We've been approved to be on iTunes, so if you have an iPod or an iPhone, you can download your very own copy of this podcast and listen at your convenience. Now, if you don't have an iPod, don't worry. You can still download it to your PC. Well, what you can do is download a copy of iTunes. Go to Apple.com, then click on the iTunes icon, and then download a copy of iTunes, install it on your PC, and then sign up for the BerlinBrigade.com podcast, and you can listen to it on your PC as well, at your convenience. I do invite you to check it out. We got the links on the homepage and on the new podcast archives page. I also want to continue to invite you to check out the link on the homepage to the movie Bratz: Our Journey Home, which is a Donna Musil film and narrated by Chris Christopherson. Waiting for my DVD to come in. Should be in any minute now, and as soon as it's in, I'll put up a nice review there. But I do invite you guys to check it out. Let's see. Oh, yes. My apologies for getting the 6 infantry gear links online. I seem to have run out of time. Next thing I know, it's time for another podcast. But by the time you're listening to this podcast, the links should be up on the commerce page of the website, so you can get access to the cool 2.6, 3.6, and 4.6 stuff, without a doubt. And as I just mentioned, the archives page is now live and ready to go. So please enjoy going back and checking out all the previous podcast episodes. And accessing the podcast will be free of charge. No hidden links, no special passwords, no secret handshakes. Just click and listen. Also, as I mentioned, there is a link to subscribe to iTunes at the bottom of the archives page, so check it out. And lastly, as a reminder, if you want to share your Berlin Brigade story with Inga Nye, you remember her, episodes 3 and 4, then just drop me a note at podcast@berlinbrigade.com and I'll pass along your contact information to Inga, and you guys get together and see what's going on there. And guess what, my friends? That's the end of the announcements for this week. Today, we are privileged to have as our special guest on the Berlin Brigade podcast, Ex-Specialist 4, John Parmenter. He served with Company D, 1st Battle Group, 28th Infantry Regiment, 1st Infantry Division, based out of Fort Riley, Kansas. He was a squad leader for the anti-tank squad of the weapons platoon there, and his weapon of choice was the 106mm recoilless rifle. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate this opportunity to tell my Berlin story. Actually, I first became interested in the U.S. Army in Berlin while I was still in high school and reading a book which included a chapter about a fellow who was serving there in the horse platoon of the 287th MP Company, but I never dreamed I'd get the opportunity. About a week after I graduated from high school, I joined the U.S. Army and was sent immediately to Fort Riley, Kansas for basic training. At that time, the 1st Infantry Division, which I was privileged to join, was a skeletonized unit, a cadre, which ran cycles of basic combat training and advanced individual training right there at Fort Riley, and then sent their graduates off to South Korea and West Germany and other places around the world in combat-ready units. About halfway, now I graduated from high school in 61, and about halfway through my basic training, the Berlin Wall construction began. This was in August of 1961, and it was a big deal. After 50 years, or almost 50 years, and several conflicts later, people tend to forget what a big deal the Berlin Crisis of 1961 was. What it did directly to the 1st Infantry Division was committed to becoming a combat deployable pentatonic infantry division. And so we, instead of just conducting cycles of training there, we started training as a division in preparation for combat deployment. I was then, after my combat, our basic combat training, I was assigned to the 28th U.S. Infantry, where I underwent training on 81mm mortars and 4.2-inch mortars. And was assigned to Company D in the weapons platoon. Later, I would undergo training on the 106mm recoilless rifle, to which I was assigned and later became a squad leader once we got into Berlin. But as you may recall, at the time of the Berlin Crisis in 1961, President Kennedy ordered that the Berlin Brigade, which at that time consisted of two infantry battle groups, such as 2nd and 3rd battle groups, 6th infantry, and medium tank company, which was Company F 40th Armor. President Kennedy ordered that the Berlin Brigade be reinforced. So the 1st battle group, 18th infantry from 8th Infantry Division in West Germany, made the charge through East Germany into West Berlin to reinforce. Now, from that point, which was August of 61 until 1966, the U.S. Army rotated units into Berlin every 3 months. Okay, so when the when the 1st of the 18th from the 8th Division had been in Berlin about 3 months, it pulled back to West Germany to its original position, and the 1st of the 19th from the 24th Division went in to take their place because they wanted the Berlin Brigade to be reinforced. The people who were running 7th Army decided that in Germany, West Germany, decided that it was too much of a drag on their combat readiness to have these full reinforced battle groups from West Germany moving into Berlin all the time, that they decided to reinforce Berlin Brigade from the United States, CONUS, which and they call these the long thrust operations or long thrust deployments. And they started sending units from 4th Infantry Division in Fort Lewis, Washington. They would actually fly nonstop to West Germany. They train in West Germany for 3 months. And then once they passed an ATT, Army Training Test, they would advance into Berlin and then stay there 3 months and then come out of Berlin and another unit would take their place. And this happened every 3 months. Well, two units from the 4th Division in Fort Lewis went, and then my division, the 1st Infantry Division, the Big Red One, became the primary long thrust division. And so our battle groups, which were always reinforced with an artillery battery, a 105 battery, and a light truck company of deuce and halves, and some other support units, would accompany the battle group. And so we would fly nonstop from Forbes Air Force Base near Topeka, Kansas, to Rhein-Main. We'd go to Weilflecken, train up for about 3 months in Weilflecken, train up to 7th Army standards, which was higher, I think, than the standards of training in CONUS. And then we would, once we passed an ATT, we would advance into West Berlin for 3 months. The 1st Division units that went in were 2nd Battle Group, 12th Infantry, 1st Battle Group, 13th Infantry, 1st Battle Group, 28th Infantry, which was my unit, and then we were replaced by 2nd Battle Group, 26th Infantry. And those were the four Big Red One units that reinforced Berlin at that time. Then the Army reorganized. They got rid of the battle groups, and we went back to infantry battalions. And the units that would reinforce Berlin at that time all came from the 24th Infantry Division in West Germany. And they were just battalions that were not reinforced by artillery batteries. It was my good fortune to be in Berlin at the time President Kennedy came to Berlin, which was on June 26, 1963. My unit was there in the city the spring and summer of 63. But President Kennedy came to town. Our whole battle group, and a battle group consisted of 7 companies.
Okay, I think we're back. We had a slight technical difficulty, but I think we've got it resolved. John, you still with me?
Yes, sir.
All righty, there we go. Good, good, good. Sir, let's pick up where you left off. You had just mentioned about President Kennedy being there and the seven units.
Right. Okay, after President Kennedy had given his famous Ich bin ein Berliner speech, he went over to the U.S. headquarters there on Clay Alley, and the whole Clay Alley was lined with U.S. troops, including the 7 companies of my battle group, the combat troops from the Company F 40th Armor, and both of the other battle groups of the 6th Infantry, 2nd and 3rd Battle Group 6th Infantry were there. And so he got a full military reception over there. He just gave a short speech at that location to the U.S. Community there in Berlin. One thing I would like to mention is that during the period between August 14, 1961, and June 1, 1963, all U.S. armed forces who served in Berlin were awarded the United States Armed Forces Expeditionary Medal, which is the same decoration presented to U.S. troops in South Vietnam and the Korean DMZ at that time. President Kennedy, I understand, when he left Berlin, was so he was so impressed with the enthusiastic German crowd in Berlin that he made a comment that we'll never see another day like this again. And of course, less than 5 months later, he was assassinated, and so I'm sure he didn't see another day like that again. It was my impression before I ever went to Berlin, from watching newsreels and that sort of thing, that West Berlin was kind of a dreary concrete city and not a fun place to be at all. Of course, the newsreels all showed the wall and the movement of troops and that sort of thing. But I found in the spring of 1963, Berlin was actually what I would expect Paris to be, you know, with bright flowers and a lot of friendly people. I was very impressed with the friendliness of the people in Berlin. They were very aware of how important it was for us to stay. And were very pleased to treat us very well. That is one thing that President Kennedy did in his speech. He essentially said, "We're here to stay, folks, and we're not going to allow these Soviets to run us off." And so they were very pleased with him and glad to see us staying there. Since I've left there, just in the past few years, I've over the internet I've gained several good friendships with people in Berlin. A fellow named Reinhard von Berneski, who has his own website, and another fellow named Rainer Hoffman, and we are constantly in communication on the internet, and we exchange gifts and that sort of thing. We've really developed some good friendships there. In addition, I've learned or gained some friendships with veterans of Berlin. I've met people who were there as early as 1945, 1946, 47, and as well as younger men who were there in the 80s. One guy I've become particularly close with, I met through the registration program on BerlinBrigade.com. I finally got to meet him last June at a convention of Berlin veterans. I've become a member of the Berlin U.S. Military Veterans Association, or BUSMA, and have been fortunate enough to attend 3 of their conventions. I'm also a life member of the Society of the 1st Infantry Division. I'm also a member of the 28th Infantry Association. And I'm a member of the American Legion Post 100 in Ocala, Georgia, which is, I had met a fellow online who was another Berlin veteran who was nice enough to arrange for what they call an honor brick in their Veterans Memorial with my name on it in Ocala, Georgia, simply because of my Berlin service. And So I joined the American Legion post there. My experience in Berlin, I think, is in some ways one of the most important things I've done in my whole life. We were sent in there during a period of crisis, and we, in looking back and looking at history, we know that West Berlin was militarily indefensible. That is, if the Soviets at any time decided to take West Berlin, they could have done it. We could have given them a black eye, but that's about it. On the other hand, they knew that if they did that, that it wouldn't be long before a B-52 would appear over Moscow and drop a big one down the Kremlin smokestack. So that, I think, the Berlin U.S. garrison there was a symbol. It was a way that the United States could remain in East Germany, and I know from 1958 on, and even before, as early as 1948, the Soviets pressured the United States and the other Western allies to get out of Berlin, but became real insistent in 1958, and it wasn't until the Cuban Missile Crisis of October 1963 that the Soviets finally gave up on trying to, October 1962, that the Soviets finally gave up on trying to chase us out of Berlin and went ahead and okayed the building of that wall, which had actually occurred in August of 61. I think while I was in Berlin, and I've only been there once, and that was those 3 months in 63, I met people who had lived under Soviet occupation in 1945. I met one lady who, along with her family, had migrated from East Prussia, when it was overrun by the Soviet Army in 1945, she had walked all the way from East Prussia to Berlin, and was living there in West Berlin. I had also met her son, who was a pilot in the West German Luftwaffe, and who was in Berlin. I guess quite secretly. He wasn't even supposed to be in Berlin. At least the Soviets wouldn't, and the East Germans wouldn't have wanted him in there. But the West Berlin people made us feel very welcome, and I was really appreciative of their being such good hosts to us.
Again, it's those citizens of Berlin. They're unique people, and it was a unique city, and it still is a unique city, without a doubt. I am making plans to get over there, hopefully before the end of this year, and to see again that uniqueness come shining through, especially now that the wall's down. Let's go back to your time and talk a little bit more about your first impressions. You mentioned that was part of what was going on, and because of the policies that were going on and everything, that's how your unit went there. But you yourself, you had, again, you mentioned that you'd seen the newsreels about Berlin, but deep down, I mean, what was your first thoughts of, this is it, you're going to Berlin, and now you're going to be right there toe-to-toe?
Well, it certainly was a unique experience, and I am a person who has been interested in history all my life, and so I got to live there at Andrews Kaserne, which of course was originally built in the 1800s as a Prussian military academy, and was later home to the Leibstandarte Adolf Hitler, which was well, later became the 1st SS Panzer Division and provided bodyguard for Adolf Hitler during his years. It was also a site of incident called the Night of Long Knives, in which this occurred in 1934. I think it was June 30, 1934, when the SA or the stormtroopers were essentially made into a much less important organization by the actions of the SS on Adolf Hitler's orders. You got to see Tempelhof, a U.S. air base, which, of course, was very important to the airlift in 1948-1949. It was. I did get to go into East Berlin on the standard tour. I suppose we visited, among other places, the Garden of Remembrance, where the Soviet Army had buried a number of its troops killed in the 1945 storming of Berlin. I got to see, of course, the wall itself was a monument to the failure of communism, and that was certainly a unique and interesting thing to see. I now am fortunate.
And on that note, we're going to bring this first part of the interview with John Parmenter to a close. Next time, we're going to continue where we left off, so you're not going to miss anything, and the interview will be in its entirety. As we wrap up this episode of the BerlinBrigade.com podcast, I want to thank John Parmenter for being our special guest. As mentioned, John will be back in 2 weeks with the final segment of his interview. At the same time, I want to extend an invitation to everyone to be on the podcast. We all would love to hear from you. So please drop me a note at podcast@BerlinBrigade.com and let me know you're interested. We have plenty of awesome interviews on tap, and I know that there are still some great stories to be told out there. You know what? Think about this. We're just a few weeks away from the start of parade season. That is, if we were still in Berlin and we were still in the brigade. So, you know what? I invite you to give us your parade season stories. Let me know. Just send me an email. If you got them, we really want to hear them, especially about the guy who locked up his knees and passed out, or how the first sergeant kept telling everyone not to move in formation, and of course, the bees from the cemetery behind the forering were no help. Or, you know what, we'd love to hear your special super secret techniques for shining your boots, provided you didn't walk in them, right? Anyway, this invitation is open to everyone. You're important to all of us, and we want to hear from you, so please drop me a note. The questions, as always, I will ask are not too intense, but your answers can be as detailed and as involved as you'd like. Remember, this is your opportunity to talk, so join the conversation. So, for now, please join us for the next podcast as we listen to part two of John Parmenter's interview, and you're going to hear me say...
Sounds like Berlin just put that sense of adventure into you. And you.
So, until next time, I am Dave Guerra. Thank you for listening to the BerlinBrigade.com podcast. Command Sergeant Major, dismiss the brigade.